This is where Boston talks hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on the home of the Bees. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
10 seconds left. Nordstrom drives it out to center ice. And the horn is going to sound here at TD Garden. The Boston Bruins come from behind. A four-goal outburst in the third period, aided by two power play strikes early in that final stanza, have taken game one of the Eastern Conference Final by a score of 5-2 over the Carolina Hurricanes.
Welcome into another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning. Eastern Conference Finals underway. Game two coming up tomorrow, of course, right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. And the two guys will be calling that are joining me in studio today, Judd Surratt and Bob Beers. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Nice Saturday off.
Yeah, right. Not too often we get
we're still working.
Get those. And, well, that's what I think a lot of us are excited about is that the show is continuing and the season is continuing. The Bruins take game one of this series. They after dispatching Columbus in six games, and now it's on to game two. Before we get into the specifics of the game the other night, just kind of your overall thoughts on the matchup here against Carolina. I mean, the first two series, you saw two, I think, pretty different opponents, right? Toronto and the high level of skill that they've got and their speed. And then Columbus was a little bit more of a physical type of a style, and they're like a more of a hardworking team. Where does Carolina fit in here, and what do you think of this matchup from the Bruins' perspective?
Well, I mean, they're described as kind of a combination of the two, right?
Yeah.
So, I really don't know yet. I mean, it's only one game, and I don't think either team was overly pleased about the way that they played in game one, just based on the comments afterwards. First period, not a whole lot going on. I shouldn't say that. I mean, both teams had their moments in the first period, but felt that they could improve. Second period, certainly, you know, the Bruins didn't like the way that they played in the second. They felt they needed to be better there. Carolina thought that they started to play their game. Third period, the Bruins benefit, you know, from scoring on a couple power plays, and then they kind of take over the game from there. So I think, if how would you like to see it played if you're a Bruins fan? You know, I mean, you want to dictate pace. You want to dictate, you know, certain situations out there. I heard Bruce Cassidy talking a lot yesterday at, you know, how they want to play in the offensive zone, man-on-man defense for Carolina, how they want to control the puck in that offensive zone, how they want to try to beat guys, get separation, take pucks to the net, you know. And then defensively, you know, you've got to be aware that they're going to send a lot of pucks to the net, and they're going to get to that. Aho's goal is a good example. I know it was on the power play, but good example. They try to get a lot of pucks there. Early in the season, they were outshooting teams by a mile. They just weren't scoring as much. So they can possess the puck in the offensive zone. They can use their forecheck to their advantage. And, you know, that's an area that the Bruins need to make sure that they're defending well in. You know, keeping that the front of the net clear, letting Tuukka see shots, you know, clearing rebounds when there are rebounds. Mm-hmm. But how this series is going to go, I mean, both teams have an idea of how they want it to go, how it's going to go. I don't know yet. It hasn't really taken shape yet. You know, the other series, they take shape after a couple of games. You're like, okay, here's what we've got. You know, here's the adjustments that need to be made. We haven't seen that just yet.
For Carolina, if you look at the numbers across the playoffs, they thrive 5-on-5, where they struggle in special teams during the playoffs, yeah, which is actually somewhat surprising considering their penalty kill because of the speed they possess. It's hard to generate a lot of time and room against them, and that's why they are so good 5-on-5. To Bob's point about the offense, if you look in the regular season, I want to say, and I don't have the numbers with me, and I'll grab them on Sunday, but if you look at what Carolina was able to do offensively from the start of the season to, I want to say, maybe the end of January, they were near the bottom of the league in offense. But from the end of January on to the rest of the regular season, they were one of the top six or seven offensive teams in the league. They started to get pucks that were going in the net. But everything is 5-on-5 for them. That's what you want to see. For the Bruins, just going back to that first game, I'm sure officiating is going to be a topic of conversation at some point today. Bruins got off to a great start. whatever you may think about those calls, the Bruins, I think that their play was slowed by the fact that they had to, they allowed a power play goal, and then they were shorthanded a couple of times. And then in the second period, they were on their heels, and Carolina was able to get to its game. But the Bruins were able to capitalize on some preventable penalties from Carolina in the third period.
You know what? It's conference finals. It's playoffs. Every call is going to be dissected. Every non-call is going to be dissected. The Bruins scored on their chances, and Carolina scored on one of their chances. To their benefit, I haven't heard anybody complain about it without being asked.
Right.
So Rod Brind'Amour just says, look, hey, we need to kill him. If we get penalties, we need to kill him. You know, Dougie Hamilton was asked, "Do you deserve those penalties?" or whatever the question was, and he said, "I didn't deserve either one of them."
He said he disagreed with the calls, but I think he kind of echoed the same thing that Brind'Amour said, which is, you know what? Once they're called, you got to kill it.
But that's, that's coming from Brind'Amour, though. I mean, hey, keep your mouth shut and just say we got to kill him. But that's, in the first period. Judd knows how frustrated I was, and he was too. I mean, we're sitting there and going, are you kidding me? Really? This is what's going to be called, or this is not going to be called. Hey, emotions are high, and I'm guilty of it myself, and emotions are high. And, when you're down on the bench, it's how you handle the emotions of getting a call or not getting a call and how you move forward. And that's going to be really important throughout. The first two rounds, we talk about it still. Being able to handle those emotions, it's even more important now. And Carolina's got a couple guys that have been to this point and have won, most notably Justin Williams and Jordan Staal. And the Bruins have plenty of guys who have been to this point and beyond. So handling those emotions is very important. I thought the Bruins did an outstanding job of it in the third period.
Well, that's what I was talking about this earlier in the morning, but this group just has that feel about it where, when they get down by a goal and, it gets into crunch time, it feels like they can kick it into another gear. There is no panic with this group, and it's very easy, and I think you maybe see that a little bit in the third period from Carolina, that when it got time in that game, they start taking some bad penalties and it really tips the balance of that game. Finding a way to keep your composure once you get to this point in the season is a lot easier when you've got half the guys in your room that have already done it before.
So for the Bruins, this starts all the way back during the regular season. Mm-hmm. This is where we talk about being a battle-tested team. You have to be battle-tested in order to win a Stanley Cup. The Bruins were under duress throughout the bulk of the first half of the season, missing so many key players. They were able to find their way to continue to win games without key guys in the lineup. They do it again in game one. So then fast forward into the playoffs. You're down three different times against the Toronto Maple Leafs. You had a couple of calls go against you. You're still able to win that series. Go to the Columbus game.
They had calls go against them in both of the series.
Absolutely.
Right?
I think there were at least three or four different replays that did not go
in the
nettings,
the goalie interference calls.
You got to be able to
costing
somehow
him a goal a game
battle
for a while.
Through that, shrug that off to get to this point. So now you're down in game one. You're down 2-1. You haven't registered a come-from-behind victory in the third period during the playoffs. You're able to do it because you capitalize. Jordan Staal is... That is the worst possible player you could have had off the ice for Carolina early in the third period with a one goal.
I don't think anybody was disputing that one.
No.
No dispute. Worst guy you could have had off the ice. A key penalty killer, a guy who takes big draws, who's going to match up defensively against your top pivot in Patrice Bergeron. He goes off the ice. You capitalize. That's a gut shot right there. And then you take a penalty shortly thereafter and then compound that one by taking one right after that.
617-779-0985. Let's open up your calls here. Maria in Watertown is up first. Good morning, Maria.
Hi, good morning, guys. And I know that we said we didn't want to dwell on the officiating, but just quickly, throughout the league, during the Stanley Cup playoffs, there have been an immeasurable number of questionable calls, questionable decision-making. And if I'm the NHL... If this is the best of the best that you have to officiate one of the most spectacular championships in all of sports, you should be calling an emergency meeting and you should be recruiting and you should make every official watch Game 7 of the 2011 Stanley Cup Finals between the Bruins and the Lightning, because that, gentlemen, is how a playoff game should be officiated. With respect to Doug Hamilton, I wanted this guy to be a franchise defenseman. His size, his skill, his skating acumen, but this kid doesn't seem to want to take a hit. And I think that is going to be problematic for him. I don't know that he's ever going to fulfill his potential. And then quickly on Brad Marchand, what he did with pulling Connor Clifton off of that Hurricane player to preserve the penalty, that is leadership. That is knowing what the moment means. And I was very, very impressed with Brad with respect to that. Thanks for the time, guys.
All right. Appreciate it, Maria. I mean, difficult to argue the fact that the NHL has had a rough offseason with some egregious missed calls that have turned games, that have turned series.
You know, people in Carolina want to complain about those penalties. They should have been shorthanded the first shift of the game.
No question.
Vogel should have been in the box the first shift of the game.
I mean, David Pastrnak got high stick twice.
Listen,
you know, didn't get a call either time. Yeah.
So, like, let's kind of move beyond it, because it really is. It's, do you take advantage or do you not take advantage? Do you keep the emotions in check and do you move forward? You're going to dissect every call, like it or not like it. Unless it costs a game, Charlie McAvoy getting hooked and Steven Stamkos scoring last year,
yeah.
You know, it's kind of get past it. And the team that handles it better, that handles the emotions better, is going to be, you know, have a huge advantage in this thing. So
I do think just about everyone would be happier if they essentially put the whistles away.
Well,
you know, unless there's something really egregious.
I think you can do that more so in a game 7 than you can in game 1.
Mm.
You know, you game 1, both teams are trying to set a tone. Both teams are, you know, game 7,
little concerned with the Corrali penalty right off the bat.
That he took a shoulder in the chin and he reacted.
He reacted, but it's like, In the playoffs, we're calling that, like, that's going to be a, you know, and
Carolina's saying in the playoffs, we're calling Dougie Hamilton reverse hit on Nordstrom.
That's it. It's kind of like, I understand, so maybe there's times when the officials need to set the tone too, but I thought, if that's the way they're going to call this series, this is going to be a long.
I mean, you got to get past it.
All right, we will try and steer away from that as much as we can this morning. 617-779-0985. We'll take more of your calls coming up. The Sports Hub Hockey Show. Here on a Saturday morning.
This is the Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerai, and Bob Beers on the home of the Bees, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. And the Hockey Show, Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, all here in the Town Fair Tire Studios this week. As we get ready for Game 2 tomorrow between the Bruins and the Hurricanes over at the Garden. Let's go to Frank the Tank up next. What's up, Frank?
Morning, guys. How's it going?
Good morning, Frank. Good.
I got just one question about the Canes, and then I really want to talk about the playoff field. My only question about the Hurricanes is, besides their speed, I want to know what other kind of problems you think that they can cause the Bruins, because it looked like they really kind of were taking over the second period there for a while. Now, the thing about the field, I've been hearing this all throughout the playoffs, and nothing. It irritates me so much to think that the field is easy. The field is easy just because Tampa Bay got eliminated and Washington got eliminated. And my whole argument was, well, if those teams were better playoff teams, they would have advanced instead of Carolina or Columbus. So wouldn't you agree that it doesn't matter who you're playing? The field is always going to get harder round per round, no matter what the team was in the regular season. They got to the second round or the third round for a reason. So just because they might have had a crappy regular season does not mean that they're a team that you should look past. I mean, I feel that a lot of Bruins fans are already looking towards playing San Jose in the Stanley Cup Finals when they haven't even dropped the puck yet on that series. So, like, specifically you, Bob, don't you think that it gets hotter and hotter no matter who you're playing?
I mean, I do, but just because it's ramped, everything gets ramped up more and more. But it's look, who would you rather play in the second round, Tampa or Columbus?
Columbus. I mean,
exactly. All right. But they're there for a reason. And they were on fire towards the end of the season. They rode that into the first round. It ran out a little bit in the second round. All right. Carolina has ridden. Judd, how many wins did Carolina finish behind the Bruins, regulation overtime?
Three fewer.
That's it?
That's it.
Wow.
The Bruins, I believe, had 47. Carolina had 44. They only finished a total of 8 points behind the Bruins in the standings.
So the margin is tight. I mean, it's you know, as good a season as the Bruins had in the regular season, you know, there is parity in the NHL, and it's showing itself here in the playoffs. So it's the teams that get that, you know, to come together at the right time. The Bruins have done it most of the year, which is to their credit. I mean, that's, you know, it's been pretty consistent. Even when they went through all the injuries earlier in the season, now they went through that great stretch, you know, later in the year, 15-0-4, whatever it was. But they've been a consistent bunch all season in the way that they've gone about their business. Carolina's second half was outstanding. That's how they got themselves into the playoffs. They were one of the best teams in the league since January 1st. St. Louis is one of the best teams in the league since January 1st. San Jose's been able to kind of maintain it most of the season. They've been a little up and down, but they've been able to maintain it most of the year. So, you know, it's the teams that are playing and come together at the right time, and can they maintain it? And for Carolina, they've been able to maintain it for their first couple of rounds. Now we'll see if they can do it in the third round.
I think one of the other big differences, in addition to the scoring that they started to get in the second half, is they got much steadier goaltending, whether it was from Mrazek or Curtis McElhinney. That was an issue that needed to be solved over the years in Carolina. They've become a grittier team with the additions that Rick Dudley and Donnie Waddell have
added. Niederreiter and, you know, Ferland, I know that, you know, they were talking about trading him at the deadline. You know, do we keep him? Do we trade him? And then he got hurt in the playoffs, but he played. He got in there the other day.
Martinook, McKeag,
these guys play hard. You don't know them, but they play hard.
Well, I mean, that's,
you don't see them, they're not household names.
Again,
but
it's kind of what we said about Columbus.
They're not here if they don't.
That, you know, Columbus is the same way. Where, look, you get that team into a playoff series where you got to go best of seven. They're going to grind you every night, and the longer that series goes, the, you know, the more confidence they're going to have against you.
And you know, Frank asked about the you know, what other issues does Carolina give you? But I mean, I really like their top four D as a group. Slavin is excellent. I mean, he's a very, very good player, and he's shown that here in the playoffs, and he's gotten better and better. So I'm looking forward to actually watching him play on a nightly basis here. You know, Dougie Hamilton, I think you can get to him. I really do. I think mentally you can get to him in this series, and we'll see. He can make a difference offensively too, but I think you can get to him. Falk is very good. He's having a good season. He's in shape. He's playing well. He's had a very good year, but he'll turn the puck over once in a while. He did it the other day to Johansson on the first goal. And Pesci's a, you know, kind of a quiet player, if that makes any sense, but he plays well. He plays hard. So they've got a good top four, but they're not somebody that you can't break through. Columbus, they had a stud in, you know, Seth Jones. They had Werenski, who apparently was a little banged up after taking a shot off the hand, but still played a ton of minutes. And David Savard, I thought, gave them everything they had in that series. But beyond that, you know, thought you could get to Columbus's D. I feel the same way about Carolina. I think that they've got some real good defensemen, but I think you can get to a couple of them as you go a little bit further down the list.
Let's go to Dean and Rentham up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning, Dean.
Hey, guys. How are you? You know what? I got to give a lot of credit to Halak for the way he's played this year to give Tuukka the rest. Tuukka looks amazing right now. So calm and collected. And I just think it's just because he's been so rested during the year. What do you guys think?
That was the first thing that Tory Krug pointed out when he was asked, what do you make of the way that Tuukka Rask is playing here thus far in the playoffs? And the first thing he mentioned was how well Halak played during the course of the season to give Rask the opportunity so he didn't have to. He wasn't overburdened with the amount of work that he had to play. And this is where you're seeing it pay dividends here in the playoffs.
I think, I don't know about every goaltender, but a lot of the goaltenders around the league have one bad game. you know, at some point.
Sure.
You know, it just, you know, they spring some leaks. But he's been good. I hope I don't jinx him, but it's been, you know, he's been good. He's been excellent. He was great in the Columbus series. He was really good in the Toronto series. He was really good the other night. So, I mean, I think something that's been a little underrated is the way that the Bruins have been able to clear the front of the net. I think that they've worked extremely hard at trying to clear the front of the net. Now, there's going to be times where guys get in behind you. You know, Duchesne scoring. Those are power play goals where they get to the top of the crease and they're going to be there. But I'm talking about shots from the point where they've been able to clear guys out most of the time. You know, when there's battles going on in front of the net, five-on-five play, and you're trying to get people from the front so that he can see the shot and handle the shot so there's no rebound or he can control where the rebound goes. I think the Bruins, by and large, I've seen some great battles in front of the net. And, you know, even some of the smaller defensemen for the Bruins have been really engaged in that area. And then once the shot's taken and it's covered up, they're cleaning house in front. I love to see it.
I mean, to me, as we've watched these playoffs develop, I've been impressed by just, you can tell, like, Tuukka's feeling it. Like, he looks confident. The shots, many of them are just hitting him right in the chest. Like, he's, you know, his positioning's been good. He just looks like a really confident guy who knows he can do no wrong right now.
He's gotten a lot of help in front, as Bob alluded to. I think his rebound control has been excellent, and I think he's helped himself out coming out to play the puck.
The saves are calm.
To help the Bruins exit the zone.
Well, that's part of what we talked about.
Underrated there, too, because that's not one of his stronger points, usually. I mean, he doesn't play the puck real, you know, he's not like a Marty Brodeur that comes out and plays the puck and rips it up the ice, you know. But he's made smart decisions when the puck is dumped in and he's been able to play it in getting it into the defenseman's hands or wrapping it around the boards up under the winger's hands, if you know, and avoiding the two-man forecheck. So he's made real good decisions, and it's something that they've Bruce Cassidy's mentioned a few times. But it's not something you think about until he screws up.
Right.
You know what I mean? Until he makes that bad decision and all of a sudden the puck's in the back of the net. And, you know, that hasn't happened. He's made really, you know, intelligent decisions with the puck when he goes out to play it. And that's a big help for the D and for the breakout.
I mean, from a team perspective, all you can ask your goalie, right, is that it takes a really good play to beat him. And that's what it feels like. That the goals that have been scored on him by and large in this playoff have been on nice plays by the opposition, right? A really nice pass to the front of the net or a nice tip or, you know, and even some of those aren't going in right now. I mean, there was that great tip from the side of the net the other night that Tuukka takes off the shoulder. I mean, he's probably going to stop it at this point. All right, let's get Sports Hub headlines. We'll continue. 617-779-0985, of course, is the number. It is the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
The Bruins, the NHL. This is the show that's all hockey.
He's gone!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Sirai, and Bob Beers. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning as we take you up until 11 o'clock. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers in the Town Fair Tire Studios. Now we welcome in Joe Haggerty, NBC Sports Boston, joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Good morning, Hags.
Good morning.
What did we learn out of game one?
What I learned was that the Bruins showed the poise you would expect. The big game experience. They acted like they'd been there before, and I think the third period played out accordingly for them. And on the other token, the other side of the coin, I think Carolina, it seemed like they weren't quite ready for that big stage. And, you know, to see them playing the way they were in the third period, taking some of the penalties, whether you agreed with the calls or not in the third period, you know, they were playing a certain way and they got ahead, and, you know, they didn't kind of ease off the way that they were playing. And I think, you know, the refs kind of caught up with them in the third period a little bit and started calling some things. And, you know, that it showed to me just a lack of experience of being at that point in the playoffs, a little bit of a lack of poise, especially in the position that they were in the third period of a game one where, you know, they were in pretty decent shape after the second period. So I've had the opinion all along. I, you know, many or some may disagree with me. I don't think this is going to be a long series. I don't think Carolina is as good a team as the Bruins are. They've got some good players, but I don't think team-wise they're as good. And they've got some weaknesses you can definitely exploit, one of them being, you know, inexperience in a lot of areas and youth in a lot of areas and at this point in the playoffs. And I think it kind of played out that way in the third period. You know, the, Dougie Hamilton's a great example, but there are others as well. And the Bruins took advantage of that. It was never more obvious than, you know, Jordan Staal takes that penalty at the beginning of the period, and then Connor Clifton goes to go after Jordan Staal for the boarding play, and Marchand just grabs him by the back of the neck and pulls him away and knows it's you know, that's not the right time and place to do that. It's great that it was Marchand of all people that did that, but team-wide, I think that's the kind of approach the Bruins have. They understand what it's like and, you know, how little things like that can hurt you in big games and, you know, deep into the postseason. And they showed something that Carolina simply doesn't have at this point. Will they gain it over the course of the series? Maybe, but it's probably going to be too late by the time they do.
Well, I mean, I agree with some of what you're saying, but at the same time, like in the back of my head, there's a voice saying, you know, I'm sure that Washington felt the same way. And you probably could even fast forward ahead, and I'm sure that the Islander fans were pretty excited about the opportunity to play against Carolina too, and yet here they still are.
Yeah, I would agree with that to an extent, but the thing I would say is that I think Washington was on fumes after their long Stanley Cup run the year before. You know, you're facing a Stanley Cup defending champ that went on a long run the season before, and we all remember when the Bruins won the Stanley Cup. They were out in seven games in the first round the following season, too. So while you give Carolina credit for taking out the Washington Capitals because they're a talented, good team, I think there is in my mind anyway, a little bit of a condition to that victory that they had over the Washington Capitals. And look, let's face it, the Islanders are a pretty good team, but they were a high effort grit team that, you know, talent wise, I don't know that they really, you know, should have been in the second round of the playoffs based on who they were and what their roster makeup was. They were well coached. They played really hard. That gets you through the regular season. Obviously it got them through a round in the playoffs, but you know, I think quality wise, I'm not, you know, going to go overboard with the Carolina Hurricanes taking care of them in the second round. I think, you know, the Bruins, where they are, being battle-hardened after the first two rounds, the regular season that they had, the experience that they had, you know, the depth they have in all areas and the way that they're playing right now, this is the best team that the Carolina Hurricanes have played in the playoffs to this point. And I think they're probably going to realize it after the series is over.
I think we all have to give Don Sweeney some credit this postseason, because his two trade deadline pickups have had a significant impact on this team. I think there were a lot of people that were underwhelmed, and myself included, when the deadline came and went, and it was Coyle and Johansson, but you can't question that anymore.
No, and, you know, obviously the knee-jerk reactions were given credence by what happened after the deadline. If you weren't, you know, bowled over by the names Marcus Johansson and Charlie Coyle. Obviously, Coyle was a solid two-way center, really stabilized the third line. He didn't do much production-wise offensively, though, in the regular season after he came. Marcus Johansson, we all know, got hurt, ironically enough, against Carolina shortly after he got there. So you didn't really – it was kind of an incomplete for him after the trade deadline as well, because he missed a lot of time. So, you know, during the regular season, there was criticism of Don Sweeney that, they weren't good enough, and it wasn't good enough for a team that, you know, could have had legit Stanley Cup aspirations. But I think we're all seeing now that when it has mattered most, Charlie Coyle and Marcus Johansson have stepped up, have produced, have really given you a viable threat on the third line. They've done what they needed to do, which was give you offense and give you production when the big guns are a little quiet in some of these games. And they've chosen some very timely moments to do it as well. You know, Johansson battling in front of the net for that rebound and that power play goal, the game-tying goal in the third period the other night, that was good stuff. And, you know, you didn't always see that prior to the other night, but I think you're starting to see it now, and I think you're seeing with both players that they're playing on a high level that is appropriate for being this deep in the playoffs. And, you know, the Bruins are going to be a handful if they continue to play that way and you have legit threats on all your lines. And, you know, a team like Carolina, who, in my opinion, doesn't really have the depth that some of the other teams do that you usually see this deep in the playoffs, I think they're going to be severely tested by what the Bruins can bring to the table. And, you know, credit Don Sweeney. He and the advanced scouts and the management group clearly saw something that a lot of other people didn't. with the way that those guys are performing right now. I think this is the best trade deadline he's had since he became GM of the Bruins, and, you know, tip of the hat to him for that.
Bruins managed to win game one despite the fact they didn't have Charlie McAvoy in the lineup. Their depth, you know, as it typically is this time of year, has been tested, and they're coming through with flying colors.
They really are, and it's been the same story all year, right? You know, credit the organizational depth, credit the coaching staff, Bruce Cassidy. He manages to find a way to put players in position to succeed when injuries or other things happen, and he's got to scramble a little bit to put players in the lineup. And, you know, Steve Kanfer comes in, hasn't played one game in the entire playoffs, comes in to replace Charlie McAvoy among the defenseman group with the open spot, scores a goal in the first period, a snipe coming as, down as the trailer, and, you know, plays a very good game. And, you know, he's done that a few times this year, and there's a lot of players that have done that. Connor Clifton's basically become an everyday player for them in the playoffs after, you know, being a really good, talented young player that showed something during the regular season, kind of unexpected, and he really stepped up, and he's continued to play pretty well, given that he's now in a high-pressure playoff situation. So, you know, there's a few examples of that, and really, when you get down to it and you see players step up in these situations, especially in the playoffs, and you see goals from all kinds of different players, and you see it's, you know, different heroes every night, and there's a lot of team efforts going on in a lot of these games where they're getting contributions all across the board, and you do get that feeling that something special is going on with the Bruins, and you do get that feeling that, you know, there's something really good ahead for this team based on all the things that you're seeing. You know, and some of it is the circumstances opening up in front of them with the playoff field and, you know, Washington going out, Tampa going out. A lot of teams that could have given the Bruins trouble kind of fallen by the wayside. But a lot of it, too, is the players on the Bruins roster, top to bottom and then beyond, the guys that they call up that they're, when they're needed, really stepping up to the plate and getting the job done. And, you know, it's you for a while now, at the beginning of the second round, you really started to envision that, you know, something good could be ahead for this Bruins team, the way things were breaking and the way that things are playing. And I think you continue to continues to get cemented with each time you see them play, that, you know, that there could be really good things ahead for this team.
All right, Hags, appreciate the time as always.
You got it, boys. Yep.
Joe Haggerty, NBC Sports Boston, joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. We will. Okay, hang on to that thought. Beers was going to jump in. I want to talk to you guys about McAvoy's suspension in game one, how they've dealt with that, some of the topics we just hit on with Haggerty we will get to coming up. We also have to talk about the Bruins' second periods. That's an interesting little pattern that has emerged here in this postseason. We'll get into that coming up as well as we continue with more of your calls on the way. 617-779-0985. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
This is where Boston talks hockey. 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 The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers. So the Bruins win game one, guys, without Charlie McAvoy, which is obviously a big storyline going into that. First and foremost, suspension deserved?
Yeah, probably.
If they had kicked him out of that game,
he might not have gotten one, right?
Well, it would have been a pretty big, significant kick if he had been kicked out of that game and then suspended for the next one, you know, because that hurts there. Because if he had been kicked out of game six against Columbus, it would have been a 5-minute major.
Right.
It wouldn't have been a two in a game, or it would have been like five in a match, I guess they call it, right? And it's either two or five. And so they would have lost him for the remainder of that game. Who knows what happens in the third period? And then for him to be suspended again, which would have been game seven, that would have been significant. So in talking to people, I think, okay, we'll kind of take this.
I kind of thought the same thing at the time, like that.
But
the fact that he didn't get
kicked
out.
He got mostly body, too. I mean, he certainly got head. He did.
Yeah.
But was it the main point of contact? And that's the rule. Was it the main point of contact? And I think that they can make an argument that he got mostly body and then he caught head. But and the fact that he wasn't, the fact that Josh Anderson was not injured, I think that was a
that
big.
That helps.
Yeah, I think it really did.
Yeah. I mean, because they do, you know, they, you have to weigh that in. If the guy, you know, if he got knocked out of that game, I think that's, you know, that definitely leans further toward suspension and all of that. But
I did think it was fascinating. So Kerry Frazier, actually, the former referee, tweeted about this, that because they made it an illegal check to the head call, they're limited to two calls in that instance.
Yeah.
2-minute minor or a match penalty. And I think what Frazier was talking about is that a lot of the NHL referees are just going to put the burden on NHL player safety. You know what? We're going to call the minor.
Especially,
you guys can figure it out.
Especially after Vegas.
The Vegas-San Jose Game 7. I was just going to bring that up.
We'll
that,
give it two, and if it warrants more than that, let the NHL handle it.
Yep. Right.
Especially after Vegas. And that point was brought up. And I'll also throw in this. Look, you're a defenseman in a series, and you've got Josh Anderson bearing down on you shift after shift after shift for six games. And he's a load, and he can move, and he can throw his weight around. And McAvoy took some hits in that series from Josh Anderson. You've got him lined up. Man, that's a green light. I'm not saying to hit him in the head. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, but you're going to do everything you can to finish that hit and finish it hard. You finally got the guy that's been hitting you all series lined up. You're going to take that hit. You know, and I'm sure the Bruins made the argument that, you know, Anderson may have changed his posture. The head might have moved forward a little bit right at the very end, or the McAvoy got mostly body. I'm sure all those arguments were made, and some of them were valid. So, you know, that's why I say, you know, okay, it's done. Finally, it's done. So McAvoy goes, he's not able to play game one. Stephen Kampfer steps in, and you know, for the record, Kampfer has played in the playoffs. He played against Toronto in the first round, and he played well. So it wasn't his first appearance in the playoffs. But he scores a big goal. He plays, you know, significant minutes. Clifton's minutes go up. I thought it was a very good effort in all by the Bruins defense as a group and the way that they played in that game. I mean, the second period, we'll talk a little bit about second periods because they addressed it. But, you know, they did a pretty good job in that game. And that's a fast team. That's a team that can get on you. They can win battles. And the Bruins, you know, they handled it without McAvoy. And now you get your leading ice time guy back in the lineup.
Well,
they did it with everybody playing. I mean, Char only played 19 minutes.
I was just
20 minutes.
Right? I was just about to say, because I think the expectation from some going in was they're going to have to shorten things up here a little bit.
And Char took the shot off the foot, so he missed a couple minutes there, but he still came back and played 7 in the second period.
You know, Clifton, 18 minutes, and you know, you get 15 minutes out of Kampfer, and like they
it's not something I want to see long term.
No,
but it's something that they were able to handle.
It wasn't like they tried to get through the game doing, you know, playing four or five guys. They went with all six pretty much all night, and it worked. I mean, those guys have risen to the occasion when they've been called upon.
They have. I also think a big part of it is the five man units, but Torrey Krug is playing the best all around hockey that I think I've ever seen him play. He was terrific defensively in that Columbus series. I don't think he gets enough.
He was one of the guys I was talking about.
The way that he was playing hard.
The battles in front.
Away from the puck and going against some big characters like Josh Anderson and Boone Jenner or whoever the case may be. But he and Carlo have been a terrific pair. But I think the five-man units operated terrifically. So the Bruins didn't spend as much time in their own zone. And I think the call from a guy like Connor Clifton, all right, so here's the challenge. Sometimes you get a point of diminishing return. We know you can play 10 to 12 minutes here in the playoffs. Can you play 16 to 18? He did. He played 18:02.
I mean, I've liked his game. He's, you know, he fits in well with this team. He can.
He doesn't shy away from the big moment either.
No.
It doesn't faze him.
He had two huge assists at the tail end of the Columbus series. He sets up a huge goal in Game 5 for the Bruins and then has another assist in Game 6.
I mean, I was saying earlier, too, for Bruce Cassidy, where you've got this guy that you're rolling out there for, you know, for 10 minutes a night, I think the confidence level goes up a little bit after you see him in Game 1 of this series, because now you know, okay, is he capable of carrying a little bit bigger load if we need him to? Not that you necessarily have to or that you want to, but if we need him to play more than 10 minutes, he's shown himself capable of doing that now.
Yeah, the depth has shown up all up and down the lineup. Not, you know, on the defense, certainly, you know, with injuries to Kevin Miller and a McAvoy suspension, and John Moore even a little nicked up, but and now up front, I mean, all four lines. Sean Corrali, I know we'll talk a little bit about the fourth line on the next segment, but Sean Corrali played more than David Krejci in that game. The fourth line saw significant minutes in that game. Chris Wagner had a goal. He had 7 shots, 4 hits, involved all over the ice. You know, Nordstrom blocking shots again. I mean, that line is depended on to play against some really good players for the opposing teams, and they've done a good job.
All right, jump in with us, 617-779-0985 with your thoughts as we get ready for Game 2 tomorrow. Matt McCarthy's got Sports Hub headlines and another hour of the Sports Hub Hockey Show coming up next.
This is where Boston talks hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on the home of the Bees, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
.985 The Sports Hub with the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Coming to you from our Town Fair Tire Studios, Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, and Bob Beers with you. 617-779-0985. Lots more still to talk about with this Bruins team as they get ready for Game 2 tomorrow afternoon over at the Garden. 3 o'clock face-off. Of course, you can hear it with Judd and Bob here on the Sports Hub. All right, let's talk about, you know, we've been talking about some of the depth. We were just talking about the depth defensively and them being tested. I know, Bob, you want to talk about the Corrali line the impact that they have night in and night out. I mean, this was going back to the beginning of the Toronto series when Corrali missed some time. I mean, it was clear that he was missed and that line just wasn't the same. We see it again in Game 1 of this series, how important that group is to the success of this team.
Yeah, and so throw in the fact that, okay, David Backes is playing on a regular basis right now, and I think the days off help him in terms of that, but he's contributed, but they try to keep his minutes to a certain number, right? So who gets those minutes if Krejci's out there? I mean, Wagner's gotten a couple of shifts. Coyle gets some shifts, especially defensive zone faceoff once in a while. But when you look at Corrali's numbers and his line, and some of this is going to be penalty kill, of course, but some of it, a lot of it's 5-on-5. I mean, he took 7 faceoffs against Staal. He took 4 faceoffs against Aho. He took 3 against McKeag, and he took 2 against Walmart. So he's being counted on a lot to play against those top couple of lines for Carolina. And, you know, a lot of it's against, that was a lot against Staal right there. He's a guy that can skate. And if they're physical, control the puck down low, that type of thing with Nordstrom and Wagner and the way that they play, that's such a benefit and that's such a boost to the team. And I know he took 2 penalties in that game. Now, I thought the first one should have been both. If they're going to call anything at all, it should have been both. They didn't call it that way. They just called Corrali. Okay, live with it. But he had another penalty. I can't remember what it was, Judd. Maybe you do. But I think it was just a kind of a...
It was the high stick on DeHaan, along the end wall.
Yeah, so, you know, you've got to be careful there, but the benefit of the way that line can play and when they're really on their game and being physical and controlling the puck down low, I mean, that gives the other team fits, and it's such a valuable tool for them. I mean, so you talk about the scoring and what, you know, that Coyle line and Johansson have done, and what they've done through the playoffs and what good pickups they ended up being. You can talk about Krejci and how clutch he is in the playoffs. And, you know, so in the top line, we haven't even talked about the top line today.
No.
And I think Corrali's line deserves a ton of credit. When you look at the ice time, you see how much they're counted on in games.
Well, that's the thing that jumps out at me, is that oftentimes you get into the playoffs and obviously, you know, your top guys are going to get more time. I look at these, the numbers are staggeringly even when you go up and down the Bruins roster. Like, they were rolling 4 lines all night. They're, you know, everybody's getting regular shifts all night. You don't have a guy, you know, sitting at the end of your bench who's only getting 6 or 7 minutes on this team. Everybody's getting their time.
Carolina had three players that played under 10 minutes, well under 10, actually around the 8-minute mark, and Bruins had none. They were all over. They were all in double digits.
I mean, and that's a game that had penalties, that has, you know, the both teams are getting power play chances, which tends to shrink guys. I mean, it shows you, again, Bruce Cassidy, you know, can use these guys in different situations. He's willing to put them out there. If they're behind, if they're ahead, like, he's got guys he can count on.
But that's also the philosophy of the team. So how many times over the last couple of years have we heard Bruce Cassidy saying that he trusts all of his players in a situation, if you're stuck in your D zone, you're going to be able to get the puck out? I think his line is basically, listen, you're an NHL player. I'm going to expect you to be out there against some top NHL opponents. You're going to have to be able to execute in that situation. I think he has shown the faith in that. But with a guy like Coyle, Krejci, Bergeron, and Corrali anchoring your four lines in no particular order, you're going to be able to build a lot of that faith. And to add Chris Wagner into the mix, that was easily his best game, even beyond the goal that he scored, to ice the game at 5-2. Seven shots on net, working hard down low from the hash marks down. He's the guy that draws the penalty from Jordan Staal, working hard defensively. But now, all of a sudden, that group has been even better to start the Eastern Conference Final.
Another guy, by the way, in Wagner that, you know, when he gets added to the team, I think a lot of us went, eh, what, really?
Not that big of a deal. And I didn't mind. He made an impact when he played against the Bruins. I mean, he was noticeable when he plays. I didn't know Nordstrom as well. And I think I said it at the beginning of the season. I don't know him that well. I'm surprised that there's nobody in Providence that can come up and play that role. He's been very good. He's been very good. And he sat out a game here and a game there. Wagner sat out a few games in the playoffs, but when they're in there, and they've been in pretty regularly lately, they're making an impact.
He's a high character, high energy guy who was around a lot of the Blackhawks core that won it in 2015. He played only a handful of games that year, but he collected a ring, moved on in part because I think a lot of the guys that knew him from the Blackhawks system, they decided, you know what, this is a guy that we can use here in Carolina. He was a captain in the minors, but he's playing some of his best hockey here in the last couple of weeks.
Fearless at blocking shots. I mean, yeah, very good in that department. Uses speed, try to cause problems. I mean, he's been good. I mean, those are two really good pickups in the offseason.
And chipped in some big goals. Who opened the scoring in Game 7 against Toronto? Mm-hmm. Joakim Nordstrom.
Oh, and Wagner's got some hands, too, as we saw the other
day.
But I think it's taken a while for it to come out. You know, remember, what has he played? 10 games here in the playoffs. That was his first point. And maybe he has finally found that comfort level. Whatever it may be, he's able to work through in his game. But what you saw in Game 1 of this series was what we saw throughout the bulk of the regular season when he was such a valuable player for the Bruins.
Let's go to Chris in Plainville. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Morning, guys. Hey, just a couple quick points. Backes, we brought him back in for the Columbus series, and surprisingly, I mean, for his toughness, obviously, but surprisingly, he does not look out of place when it comes to the overall game like he did earlier in the season. He's taking great lines to the puck. He's obviously got touch. I mean, he's obviously got toughness you need, but he's showing himself worthy of being able to stay out there, and that's a big plus for us for the series. And my last take is Tuukka. The one thing I've always been not a big fan, but the one thing that I've seen him do better, and he even did it better than Bobrovsky, is that his rebound control has been insane. I mean, when he's kind of getting small when he's making that save, and he swallows everything. There's like nothing being given up for rebounds. Those two things I've noticed. And you guys have a great morning. See
you. I appreciate it. The point about Backes is that during the course of the season, obviously, it's well documented about, you know, having the sit down with Bruce Cassidy and, you know, discussing his role on the team, and clearly things had not been going well for him. He found a role that he can play, and he's doing it to the best of his ability, but as he's doing that, we're starting to see flash. I mean, just little things like the other night beating out the icing calls, and, you know, yep, like that's the kind of, you know, at this point, that's the kind of guy that the Bruins need in that role, is a guy who's going to do those little things, who's not going to be the guy that you're going to count on to score a goal every night, but is going to be able to give you quality time in his limited minutes, as you mentioned, Judd, that they're trying to keep him to a certain level, and that's where he's best fit, it feels like, on this team right now.
He played 8.5 minutes in game 6 against Columbus, and he got separation and scored a big goal for Bruins, right? I think it was the third goal, wasn't it? Third goal against them. So the 3-0 win, he got the third goal. He played 8.5 minutes. They have 2 days off, right, before the next game. He has fresh legs, 10 minutes plus against Carolina in game 1. 2 more days off. Now you're going to game 2 on Sunday afternoon. So, you know, Bruce Cassidy admitted as much yesterday. Look, you know, we got to watch his minutes. If we're going to have him in the lineup every day, we got to watch his minutes in order to get the most out of David Backes. And I think, you know, you're seeing that right now. And hopefully he can continue to do it because he's been effective. He's been very effective.
And he's bought into his role, at least, you know, for the time being. This is only the second time, I think, during his 13-year NHL career that he has made it this far in the playoffs. He has never been to a Stanley Cup final. And he had mentioned, he was very open about it in Columbus when he wasn't playing in the lineup. He said, I've taken some long walks to make sure that my mind is in the right place. So when I'm called upon, I'm able, you know, to help my team out. And he certainly has here when he's been inserted into the lineup.
He had two, so he had a 3-game point streak, right? He had two assists in 2 straight games. I thought they might sit him out in game 6. So just in case there's a game 7, I thought, but they limited him to 8.5 minutes in game 6, and he had a big goal. So, I mean, he's been able to do the job as long as, I guess, the minutes are in the right area.
I mean, look,
he's been good.
I give the guy credit because not every player in that circumstance is going to be willing to make that sacrifice.
True pro. I mean, you don't like it. Nobody likes it, but, you know, whatever the best thing is for the team, you know, whatever you're thinking otherwise, you know, you conduct yourself for whatever the best way for the team is. You know, I mean, you're fuming inside. You want to play. You want to contribute. You feel that you can contribute. You shouldn't be in this league if you don't feel that way. And, you know, so, you know, Stephen Kampfer sitting there watching game after game after game. I want to be in there. I want to be playing. You know, I got beat out by somebody. You know, Clifton has beaten me out. I want to get back in there and prove that I can do the job. But the way you conduct yourself and the way that you are when you get to the rink and with your teammates, you conduct yourself in a pro way. And I think it's shown up. I mean, Stephen Kampfer is a great example. Did you see the picture of the bench after he scored? You know, as he was coming back to the bench, just everybody just happy for him. Because you know how hard the guy works to stay in shape and be ready to play when the time comes. And I think I give him all the credit in the world for what he did.
Well, especially, I mean, that's not easy.
That's not easy.
It's not easy to, I mean, there's only so much you can do as far as practice and, you know, and bag skates and all that. But, you know, you get tossed into game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals and it's like, we need you to play a significant role tonight. Go. And they have the confidence to be able to do that. And he's got the game to be able to do that as well. So, you know, that's, again, not easy things you're asking of some of these guys to do, whether it be mentally or physically.
I was one of those guys. I mean, it isn't easy. I mean, you want to play, but at the same time, you know, it's everything for the team, whatever it takes, and you've got to be ready to go when your number gets called.
617-779-0985. We continue on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub Hockey Show continues. All right, we've kind of brushed on this a couple of times, but haven't really dug into it yet. This kind of pattern that seems to be emerging with the Bruins and their struggles in the second period.
Got to have a little negative, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's it was noticeable. I mean, the Bruins, they start strong, they finish strong, but in the middle, there's kind of there's been some issues. +8 goal differential in the first period, +8 goal differential in the third period in the postseason, -1 in the second. It's something that Bruce Cassidy addressed the other day. What's going on? I mean, is this just a, you know, it just is is something that has happened? Is there something? Are they taking their eye off the ball? Do they take their foot off the gas a little bit? What do you think's going on in the second period?
Well, he did address it. I think it was yesterday, whatever day it was, yeah. But I think he talked about it yesterday. So normally what happens is if you're stuck out there for a little while, right, you're stuck out on the ice for a little while in your own zone. Now you get the puck and you finally get it out to the neutral zone and you're dumping it in or trying to get it all the way down so that everybody can get off. Normally, if you dump a puck in and you got guys trying to get a line change, so the player that's furthest from the bench should stay. And the center and the other winger should go. Mm. Whoever's in the middle, whoever's closer to the bench. The two players closer to the bench go. The guy that's furthest from the bench has to stay. And that's the same with the defenseman, really. He was talking about they're changing his three-man unit. So if you change as a three-man unit and the other team senses that, they're going to try to get that puck up quickly. So now your D have to stay. Now they can't get off. Mm-hmm. Now you get back in the zone and you're exhausted. You're trying to, you know, you want to close on guys as quickly as you can. You want to take away time and space. But when you've been out there for a long time, the legs aren't working the way that they should, right? And it's actually, you know, I don't know how much teams practice it, but I think it's a significant part of the game, how you defend when you're really tired. So you try to play man-on-man in those situations, that's going to be really difficult. And you pack it in, you try to contain, you try to keep everything on the outside, you keep the middle of the ice clean, but you're not able to close and take away that time and space as quickly as you'd like when you've been out there for a while. And, you know, other teams sense it. And, you know, when the Bruins have other teams and they've got them hemmed in and they're not able to get off the ice and they're tired, you want to make smart plays in that offensive zone. And if the puck does get dumped out, you want to get it right back up the ice and keep those same guys on the ice. It's a big part right now of the game because shifts are so short. You know, you're accustomed to that. You're on, you're off. You try to stay as fresh as possible. But when you're out there for a long time, that's when mistakes start to happen. Either you're scoring chances, penalties, bad things happen when you've been stuck out there for a long time. And it's the teams that are able to exploit that, you know, it can take a huge advantage.
Of the four teams that are remaining in the playoffs, three of them have been outscored in the second period. For the Bruins, it's just a slight margin. I think it's 11-10. But the Sharks and the Blues have both been outscored in that second period. It's the longer change. It's a little bit more problematic. That's part of the reason, just going back to the big picture, why the NHL, when they changed to the 3-on-3 overtime format, that they made the goalies change ends. Because of the longer change, you're going to see more goals. And as a result, you're going to see more games decided in the 3-on-3 overtime session.
I like that part. I like that part of it.
Because they change ends.
Well, and it should be. It should be a little bit of a challenge there, right? I mean, it's these are the kind of the little things that
you talked about dump-ins.
You don't pay a lot of attention
pucks?
To.
Where you put pucks, you know. Okay, so if you're dumping a puck in those situations, where do you want to dump it? If you're not... pressured, where do you want to put it? Well, I mean, my theory is you put it on the side of the benches.
Right.
In that corner.
Because yeah, now you're trying to force them to go up that
side. Don't put
it
on the other side because that's further to go to try to get out there and try to catch up to a guy that's posting up at the far blue line looking for the long home run pass. So, you know, you try to put it on that side, it's a harder pass to make diagonally all the way across the ice because you got guys coming on, you got to pass through players. So, you know, there's a lot of little things that go along with it, but sometimes you don't have an opportunity to dump it where you want to. You've got a guy in your face. You've got to get to the red line. You know, you're exhausted already. So there's a lot of little things that happen in those shifts, especially in that second period.
All right. Something else that we mentioned that we haven't talked about yet is the top line. You know, during the course of the playoffs, we've seen a lot of Pasternak playing with the Krejci line. He obviously was having his massive struggles throughout most of the playoffs. He has started to shake that off and play a lot more like himself. Maybe getting back into that comfort zone with Bergeron certainly helps that, I would imagine. What did you see out of them the other night? And early on in the show, we talked a little bit about what Carolina brings to the table as far as their top 4D. What kind of matchup is this for that unit, and can they have sustained success against this Hurricanes defensive core?
Yeah, well, who leads the playoffs in scoring?
Brad Marchand.
You know, has that line been as dominant? They've had games where they have been, but have they been as dominant maybe as we've seen them in the past?
Not even close.
But they're checked tightly. And so now they're going to see a lot of, you know, you assume Slavin. Let's see, but he's a left side D. So that's, you know, Pastrnak. Last series, Seth Jones and David Savard saw a lot of Marchand. He had to fight through that a lot. So that was on the they were right D. So Marchand's going to see a lot more of that. I mean, you're all over the place in the offensive zone, but I'm talking about off the rush most of the time, and you know who you end up against a lot. And you know Bergeron's always against those top guys. So it, Corrali being able to do what he does takes some of the burden off of Bergeron's line, and it frees them up to be a little bit more offensive. And you're going to need that, I think, for the remainder of the playoffs, however long that is. And it was good to see them get on the board. It was more 5-on-4 where they got on the board. Marchand's two of his points were on the power play. I think Pastrnak was held off last game, if I'm not mistaken. So 5-on-5, they're still going to have their challenges. And teams check them as tight as they possibly can. And they don't have the Carolina doesn't have the luxury of the last change. I wanted to see what Rod Brind'Amour would do in terms of trying to match up. He didn't have any real hard matchups against against Bergeron last game. Will he change that when he goes back home? Possibly. You know, possibly see a lot of stall. But right now he doesn't have that luxury, and he doesn't seem like he's intent on getting a line against him. He probably wants Slavin against him as much as possible, though.
Quick question about Rod Brind'Amour. Does he pull the goalie
and or Pesci?
Pull the goalie a little bit too early the other night?
Not if they score.
Well,
I mean, right? There's no right or wrong there.
I know. I know this is kind of like a new, you know, it's like a new school
score,
of thinking on some of these coaches
if
that
they get scored on. It's you know, the wrong thing to do.
Yeah, if it were Patrick Roy, I think Bob had mentioned it probably would have been 2 minutes earlier.
Yeah, right.
Right. Yeah. He'd go about 5 minutes
there's
left.
There's so
right?
much that goes into it. Who's the personnel on the ice? Do you think they're tired? What point of the game is it? Can you catch them by surprise? You're going to make the goalie pull. So he did it with, what, 2:30, you know, about 2.5 minutes remaining. You're probably going to do it in the next 30 seconds or so. He thought he'd take advantage. He probably thought he had the upper hand. And obviously the Bruins were able to work the puck out and score the empty netter.
One thing I don't know, Judd, I'm going to try to find it. Was it after an icing? So, you know, after an icing, maybe a line was out there for a little while, and you think that maybe, okay, we can put our top guys out there against...
Yeah, you know, I don't remember exactly. It was an offensive zone faceoff.
I'm going to try to find it. It was, yeah.
All right, let's get to Patrick. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Love
sure.
the show.
Thanks.
Listen, I think one of the biggest factors, and you kind of hit it on the head earlier, is I think the lights may be a little too bright for Dougie. I don't know if he can handle the pressure of playing in the Eastern Conference Finals against the Bruins of all teams. I mean, he did not look comfortable out there. Looked like he was trying to play a game that's just not him, you know, throwing hits and – you know, being a physical defenseman gets him into penalty trouble. I mean, this is a guy that looks like he licks stamps for excitement. So you think so? Just getting him off his game and being able to grind him down and get him to take those dumb penalties, I think that's something that's going to be a key to the success going forward. Thanks, guys.
I appreciate the call. I'm interested to see how this plays out because obviously it's one game in the series. But, you know, the crowd was all over Hamilton the other night. He takes a couple of penalties. You know, he didn't agree with them, obviously, and said as much after the game. But this is an interesting storyline, I think, especially for Bruins fans in this series, because this is a guy that looked like at one point was going to be kind of a future franchise defenseman for this team. And now, you know, see what he has become and what his future looks like.
Well, here's the other thing with a guy like Dougie Hamilton, and for Carolina, they have a lot of right-handed defensemen. They lost a key one in Trevor Van Riemsdyk in the second round. So all of those guys, and Dougie Hamilton in particular, are probably going to be seeing some more ice time. For Hamilton, and what I thought that the Bruins did a good job of was getting right in his face and forcing him to make plays under duress. He had a hard time doing it.
I just want to circle back. I did find that it was not after an icing call. There was a whistle, defensive zone. Rask stopped a puck and covered it up. The Bruins came back out with Coyle, Krejci, Corrali, essentially three centermen for that faceoff, and then Carlo and Chara. And that's when Carolina
That's when they pulled the goalie. Yeah. Okay. All right, we'll get Sports Hub headlines, and we'll talk with Billy Jaffe coming up as we continue here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
The Bruins, the NHL. This is the show that's all hockey.
He scores!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Sirai, and Bob Beers on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Sports Hub Hockey Show. Taking you up until 11 o'clock. Ryan Johnston, Judd Sirai, Bob Beers here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. And now we welcome in Billy Jaffe of Nesson, joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Good morning, Billy.
Good morning, Ryan. Judd, Bob, how's everybody today on this actually very beautiful day outside? Finally, it's nice.
It's starting to feel, it feels like playoff time. It's like you get hockey in May. It's supposed to be nice outside, right?
Exactly. Shorts to the garden. That's what it should be, you know, shorts and a jersey. Good stuff.
So, I mean, we turn to you for advice about what's going on around the league throughout the course of the season. So
feel sorry for you.
Well, the Carolina Hurricanes, you know, we've been talking a little bit about that, you know, game one matchup and what this series is going to be like going forward. What did you take out of game one from the Carolina side? And, you know, is what we saw what we can expect out of the Hurricanes? Should we expect better? Should we expect worse?
Well, I would definitely think you expect better. I mean, if you watch that second period, I don't know if Bob and Judd agree with me or not, that second period, I thought they were pretty darn good. And I think that's what you're going to get a heck of a lot more. At least that's their point of emphasis tomorrow, is to get in on the forecheck better, to be faster to plays. I know that the coaching staff of the Carolina Hurricanes yesterday showed their players the forecheck from the second. When they put it into corners, they retrieved it. They're not a grinded-out team so much as they are quick on the attack with regard to getting the puck, and then they did that low-to-high play really well. I don't know how many times. More than a couple. I watched them do it. They got the puck back to their point men, and they utilized their quickness, their speed, and their skill. I mean, there were a couple chances, right, for Aho, Teravainen, et cetera, on the side of the net that I thought gave the Bees a little bit of trouble. But this is they're just a relentless, rambunctious team that believes in what they've got going, even though not a lot of other people do. And I definitely expect better out of them in game two.
We were talking earlier, and callers have brought up about Dougie Hamilton, and is this, you know, is the lights, are the lights too bright for him? And, you know, some of the guys on this team that haven't been to this level. How about the head coach in Rod Brind'Amour? This is, you know, he's had a hell of a season taking over there. Is there, you know, what's the impact of him? Because it seems like these guys are ready to run through a wall for him at any given time, but can he handle it at this level?
I sure think so. He seems calm. He seems composed. He's an intense man. I mean, that's just the way he played his entire career, from, you know, playing at Michigan State for a year to playing in the NHL for what, two decades, basically. I mean, he had an amazing career, and this guy, he doesn't seem to be frazzled at all. Again, he talked at length yesterday. I had a chance to just say hi to him quickly over at the hotel, too, and spoken to Rod a few times during the playoffs. He gets that he's a new coach, but he has Jeff Daniels on the bench with him, Dean Chenault, who, I'm, you know, Beersy knows real well, and Judd knows it. And this is a guy who's been the head coach in the American League. He's been assistant in the NHL, and Daniels, a head coach in the A as well. These are guys that he's really relied on, and it doesn't seem too big for me. Now, that doesn't mean in-game there might be a thing or two here or there that he's going to continue to learn as a head coach versus an assistant coach, but he has the pulse of his team, and I think that's always the first thing you want from your coach. So you got to have that pulse of your team so you're pushing the right buttons at the right time.
We're talking about the depth of this Bruins team and what they've been able to do throughout the course of the playoffs. We see it again the other night, McAvoy out, and the Bruins get, you know, good games out of Clifton and Kampfer, and they're able to roll 6D, and they're able to roll four lines all the way through the night and get the production out of them. Mm-hmm. Can Carolina counter that? Like, are they deep enough to counter the Bruins, especially because, as we pointed out, I think there's three forwards on the Carolina roster that played under 10 minutes in game one.
Yeah, that's what they've been having to do an awful lot in the playoffs, even more so early on, fellas, when they had, you know, major injuries. In this game, they got Ferland back, and, you know, Martinook's been in and out of the lineup, but he played. You know, can they handle them? I said going into game one, numerous, you know, whether it was interviews or whatever, I thought that the third and fourth line for the Bruins could have a significant impact in this series. And in particular, you know, the fourth line, we understand what they're about, right? I mean, we love them. They're consistent. They especially since Corrali's been back in, they make such a difference because they're so trusted by the coaching staff and their players and everything. The third line, to me, is that huge wild card. You know, you're talking about, I think, a potential mismatch on the bottom six for the Bruins. And obviously, it worked a bit. I know Johansson's, you know, the first goal was over to Kampfer. That was great. The second goal was a power play. But it's those three players, I think, that it can have a major impact on this game with their size, their smarts, and their intelligence, you know, on the ice. I do think that that's an area that the Bruins are better in, overall depth. Even as great as I think the top, you know, two or maybe three defensemen are for Carolina, the Bruins, I think, have better depth on the blue line, too. They do. And so I think that's a big advantage for the Bees in this series.
Well, with Carolina in particular, you've got two forwards up front that have dealt with some injury problems throughout the playoffs. One is Jordan Martinook. He didn't play a whole lot in game one. And the other, obviously, is Michael Ferland, who just stepped back into the lineup. So I think that bears watching as the series rolls on.
I agree. And Ferland, to me, he's cautious, at least in my eyes. And again, having done a couple of their games earlier in the playoffs, being around him, he was in, he was out. It doesn't seem to be a lot of, I'm going to make it through this. I'm going to battle through. He's the pending UFA, Judd. You know the story well. You know, where is he at? Where's his intensity level at? We understand. You know, he can be a ferocious hitter. We saw that firsthand, and he can have an impact in some games. But on the other hand, haven't really seen it. I like Martinook. He's a classic, you know, depth player, but he's got to play with a certain edge, a certain style. And, you know, it doesn't benefit, you know, either coach, I think, will tell you they don't want to get into the scrums and all that stuff. But especially, I don't think it benefits the Carolina Hurricanes, Judd, because I don't think they have that edge when it's all said and done. And the Bruins, you know, you saw Char, he was more than happy to engage a couple of guys when there were a few scrums there. You know, the big boy came in and was more than happy to chat with a few of them.
Yeah, a lot of them was Niederreiter, right? He's going to go to
exactly.
He's made a big difference since he's been on this team. But, you mentioned some of those guys. I mean, Ferland, he got to 11 minutes last game, but didn't notice him a ton, right?
No.
I mean, but they had a couple guys that didn't reach, including one defenseman. It was Fleury. Hayden Fleury played 8 minutes in the game, so they're going to rely heavily on, you know, those top four or five. I mean, DeHaan's ice time was decent, but, you know, it's going to be a lot of that Slavin and then a couple forwards that didn't. McKeg had one of the goals. He only had 8 minutes of ice time.
Yeah. You know, when I talked to Rod Brindamore before the Islanders game, Bearsy, he talked about, actually, I beg your pardon, it's about one of the Washington games that I covered. He talked about, he says, look, I've got a bottom six. You know, he had more injuries then, and he had brought up two guys, one guy who never played in the NHL, a Finnish kid. And now, you know, he also had another kid in this Manalainen who it may be back soon. He may be back, but and they're hoping he comes back. But he had bottom six guys. He admitted, he's like, look, I don't know what I got here. I got to find three of them that can play third line. Now, he's in a little bit better shape now. You mentioned Martinook back. We already talked about Ferland. But he still needs, you know, I still think he's kind of rolling the proverbial, you know, coaching dice when he says, when he throws out that fourth line. He understands that they're limited. That's just the facts. It's not disrespect to them. They're just limited in their depth right now.
Well, their ice time is going to be cut way down when they go behind in a game as well, right? I mean, especially in a third period when the Bruins score two early goals on the power play. He's going to shorten his bench in a big way. So
he's going to. And the other thing is, he admitted, he said, look, a guy like Fleury, who might get a little bit more ice time at home, where he can obviously control the matchups a little bit more. But, you know, I still don't expect Fleury to get more than maybe 11 minutes or so. But, you know, and those bottom guys, too, if he can massage it a bit more when he's at home, he'll do it.
Bruins get back-to-back power play goals early on in the third to go from a goal down to a goal up. That's one of those things as you look at going into this series and say, all right, Carolina's special teams have not been good so far in the postseason. What's the biggest key to that part of the matchup for the Bruins?
Keep creating power plays for themselves. You know, I mean, keep your feet moving, keep driving to the net, force them to have to, you know, take you. I mean, with regard to the power play, I'm sure you guys talked about it earlier. When did it start working? It wasn't pretty early on again, but when it was pretty, when scoring, it's because it simplified it. So for the Bruins, it simplified it. I mean, Jacob Slavin has, you know, Beersy being a former D-man, you agree, and Judd, you've seen for, you know, two, three, four decades, whatever, in pro hockey, as good a stick as anybody in the NHL.
Yeah.
I mean, he really does. He covers so much ground. I like Brett Pesce, too. But you still got to get those guys moving a bit. And how do you do that moving? You don't hold on to the puck. You simplify it. You move it. You crash the net. Those kind of things. Don't let them have the good stick. I know it sounds easy here on a radio interview, but that's to me, that's a big key.
And on their power play, it's been a little surprising that they haven't had the numbers, because I think that they've got the personnel to be able to be very good in that department. And that play by Svechnikov on the pass to Aho backdoor kind of illustrates what they're capable of doing. They were a threat that game.
They were very much a threat. That was Svechnikov's first game, I think, I'm told, if I have my notes correct, on that first unit jersey. And so that's something that Rod Brind'Amour hadn't been using much, or if at all. He had been on the second unit. Remember, this Svechnikov kid, top pick last year, comes in, starts slowly, they work him in, and now he's a really good player. I think he's an excellent player when it's all said and done. But now he's getting that left side on the first unit, which is something that they hadn't used before. And so I agree with you. And I thought, guys, throughout the game, especially that second period, mid-first to late second, I thought they used that, what do you want to call it, a shot pass or the fake shot pass a few times beautifully when they got it back to the point and they looked for tips wide of the net on the side. I thought the Bruins, you know, look, they're going to have to deal with that. And I thought Caroline did a real nice job there.
We're talking to Billy Jaffe, of course, from Nesson, and we go around the NHL with him. Western Conference Finals are going to get underway tonight, Billy, with St. Louis and San Jose. What are you expecting out of that series?
I'm expecting another really close series. Both of these teams have, gone the distance just about. St. Louis had four games in the first round, but they've had seven-game series. Very, in a sense, similar teams. Both have good size. You've got, people always focus to me, at least to me, on Burns and Carlson for obvious reasons on San Jose. But, I really like Marc-Edward Vlasic and what he has brought. And I know when the Bruins play them, I know Beersy talks about him, Judd talks about him, Brick, et cetera. Vlasic doesn't get a ton of attention, though, in the East, given the fact that he plays out West. And he's made a huge difference since he's come back into their lineup. I think he's a difference maker for them. He gives them a huge top three instead of just those two offensive-minded guys. And St. Louis has got a pretty good defensive crew as well. I mean, the way that, Parayko and, Bouwmeester's really had a rebound year this year. He plays 20 solid minutes for Craig Berube. This is a team in San Jose. I like the size of their forwards. I think they're young. They're young vets. The Timo Meyers, the Tomas Hertls, are blossoming at the right time. They're really blossoming right now, and Hertl is a beast to deal with out there. And St. Louis has got some of their own young guys, one guy in particular, this Robert Thomas, who I fully admit, I knew of when he got drafted. I didn't realize that he'd be this good. Maybe even St. Louis people didn't this early, but he's been a key element for them. Both good teams, both well-coached, and obviously Craig Berube should be getting a new contract very soon from Doug Armstrong in St. Louis.
How about Jordan Binnington? I mean, that's been a terrific story this year, getting the opportunity in the latter half of the season and now into the playoffs, where he's been stellar for them. And it's not brand new. I mean, we've seen guys kind of come out of nowhere before, but this is just another one of those stories where, a guy gets his shot and he's made the most of it.
Yeah, I mean, is this one of those guys that's going to be long-term for them or not? They don't really – I mean, of course they care, but right now it's the here and now. He has been really good. I respect the hell out of it. I think he's been great. I don't think – maybe it's just because his body of work, fellas, isn't long in the NHL. It's literally a half a season. That's it. I also want to say he doesn't scare me. There's some other goalies, I guess, that, kind of give me the goalie scares a little bit more, but Binnington has given them a calmness in the back end that has been really, really good. Martin Jones, on the other end, has scared me at times because he hasn't been that good at all. Now, the last, five games or so, he's been really good. He's been excellent. But he had, under an .860 save percentage and over a 4 or 5 goals against average in the first five games against Vegas in the first round, where he was really off. But lately, he's been better. I guess my confidence level in him is not as high as it is in a guy like Binnington. Binnington just has got this calm, stoic demeanor. I don't think it's an act. I think he means it. I think he's just one of these guys that doesn't get the cliche too high or too low. The guys really like playing for him because of how he's into it. He's just focused. He's laser focused. He's into it. And he does not seem to give up a bad goal. Goals are going to beat him. There might be a goal or two where they say, okay. But they're not bad. They're not awful. There's a big thing to be said for that.
Just going back to Martin Jones for a second, because you brought up, kind of his shaky play, especially early on in the playoffs. But that's kind of the story of his season, right? I mean, they had a decent season, but his goals against was up around 3. His save percentage was 896. Yeah. It's not he's had struggles at times this year.
They had the best team with the worst goaltending in the National Hockey League this year. That's what they had, because the Arundel, you know, was okay, but nothing. I mean, you know, he's no Jaro Halak. You know, Halak was, you know, the story of Jaro Halak, and I'm going on a tangent here, but it's just so huge for the Bruins this year. But going back to San Jose, no, they were porous, and Pete DeBoer knew it. And there were times he tried to coddle it, and there's other times that he called them out. And, look, I don't know if you guys agree or not. I mean, San Jose, I got a lot of respect for. I think they're a really, really good team. And if the Bruins can get to the final, I think that'd be a holy smokes final.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I think that, given the option, and I'll just, not that we're going to look too far ahead here, but given the option, if you're a Bruins fan and they do eventually make the finals, which would you rather face?
I guess St. Louis. I don't know. I don't care. Talk to me after the series. Let's see who's healthy, who's not. I mean, I guess San Jose, St. Louis, but St. Louis also got a ton of respect for the way that they've played and since the second half of the year. And I think their D crew, especially their top four, I think is really good. And you want to talk about the Bruins, like Charlie Coyle type third line. Well, their third line with Pat Maroon and Bozak and this kid Robert Thomas, they're stepping up at the right times too. So they're nicely depth oriented as well.
So we root for a long, tiring seven game series, right?
There you go. That's what we're looking for. Yes, that's what we root for.
Appreciate the time as always, Billy. Enjoy it, and we'll talk to you next week.
See you guys.
Billy Jaffe of Nesson joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. That's going to about do it for this edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Judd and Bob will be on with the call of the game tomorrow, 2:30 pregame, 3 o'clock or thereabouts face-off over at the Garden for Game 2 of the Eastern Conference Finals. I'll be here from noon until 2:30 with Johnston and Flint, so we'll lead you right up into that game tomorrow afternoon. Looking forward to it. We'll talk to you next week here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Stick around for Gasper and Murray.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.